Absolutely. Hello, my name is Annie Fine. I'm from the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and we don't have cow bites in New York City, but I'm going to be changing the topic and talking about monitoring healthcare workers for Ebola virus disease based on our experiences with our one case that we had. So we started this process on October 12th when a health worker in Dallas tested positive for Ebola, which was quite a surprise in the United States, had not been anticipated. And I just wanted to highlight what the timeline was. On September 29th, the Dallas case was admitted to the hospital. On October 12th, it was announced that the first Dallas nurse had become infected, and then 3 days later, a second Dallas nurse. So at that point, within that time frame, we realized that we were going to have to probably deal with monitoring, because prior to that, their healthcare workers in the United States, it was only recommended that they self-monitor. So we started to think about it, we started to plan for it, but a little too soon, we had our first case in New York City on October 23rd. And I just wanted to also note that the CDC guidance, which then came out 4 days after our first case was admitted. So we were scrambling. Domestic healthcare workers with appropriate PPE were, at that point, once the guidance came out, considered low but not zero risk, and active monitoring was recommended for everybody who was low but not zero risk by CDC, but direct active monitoring was recommended for this subgroup of healthcare workers. The rationale for active monitoring is that healthcare workers could have an unrecognized breach in PPE, and that it was critical to recognize those infections early and to isolate anybody who had potentially Ebola. Active monitoring is a twice daily check for symptoms or fever. It goes until 21 days after the last exposure or the last infectious day of the patient that's being treated. And that the health department under active monitoring has primary responsibility for daily communication with the healthcare worker according to the CDC guidance. Direct active monitoring, by contrast, requires that the taking of the temperature, at least one of those temperatures during the day, has to be observed. New York City chose not to do this. We were not set up to do it, and we didn't feel it was necessary, and that continues to be our policy. I also want to highlight that for the rest of this talk, you might consider, this talk I thought might be somewhat irrelevant, but could become more relevant if we do consider doing this, if we happen to have a MERS case in the U.S., given what's going on. So it may be more relevant than I thought. The challenges. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the challenges. The first challenge that we faced was really, we had our patient in Bellevue. It was developing operationalizable criteria for who needed monitoring. So the recommendation was definitely for anybody who did direct patient care, but what about lab workers? Which lab workers required monitoring? Did any person who walked into the lab require monitoring? What about contractors? We had to define exactly what type of exposure put you on the list. Also, we needed up-to-date contact and address information. You would think this was easy to get. We got information from human resources, but much of it was out of date, and this was not at all easy to do. We needed a system to be set up very quickly for 24/7 data collection, because that's how long the patient is there, and transmission of that data to the health department so that we could follow up with all of these workers. We needed to deal with issues of healthcare worker travel. There was no restriction on travel for healthcare workers under monitoring. However, there were certain jurisdictions that applied more stringent restrictions on those healthcare workers. And so a healthcare worker who planned travel either overseas or to other states might face direct active monitoring, might face quarantine, or might simply not be able to go. So we had to negotiate all of those issues. The other issues we had to deal with was non-adherence. In the beginning, this was an issue mostly because the healthcare workers really didn't understand the system, but we had to have a system for following up on all of those who did not report in on any individual day or for multiple days. And then we also had to deal with issues of when they developed fever and symptoms and how we were going to respond. And then finally, there were people who were healthcare workers at Bellevue who resided outside of New York City. So did we have to notify other jurisdictions? What plans did we have to make in coordination with those other jurisdictions to either do more monitoring or respond if they did become ill? So this is just a picture to demonstrate the challenges of operationalizing who needs monitoring. This is a picture showing the corridor that was where the patient stayed in the hospital. The patient rooms are indicated by the arrow, and the point of care lab was in a different location. So somebody had to sit in the hallway and write down on a log who needed monitoring. So who needed monitoring? Was it just people who put on PPE? Was it people who went in beyond the door to the patient room and observed the doffing process? Or was it anybody who went through that door? Was it anybody who went through the point of care lab? There was a system for handing off lab specimens. So these things, it wasn't as simple as just saying, oh, it's very easy to say this person and not this person. We really had to be very concrete about it, and it required a lot of discussion and clarification with the hospital. So this decision, these development of these types of criteria, really depends on the physical layout of the hospital and how each individual hospital manages a patient like this. So our experience was that 150 workers or more, including people on our own staff, including police officers, were initially put onto this list, and we started to monitor them as best we could. We set up a call center to do this 24/7, but ultimately we were able to take a lot of people off the list, luckily, because monitoring is not benign for these individuals. And we ended up with 107 who ultimately completed monitoring and did meet the criteria that we developed for Bellevue. We had no cases of Ebola, thank God. And the adherence greatly improved over time, and we had very few who developed any fever and symptoms, and we were able to manage them simply by sending them home and following them at home, the few that did. So the main points I wanted to make is that this must be planned for. This is not something you can do on the fly. Do not underestimate the task. You need high-level buy-in at the hospital among senior staff. You need to define clearly who needs to be monitored. It is hospital-specific. You need to create a log for a collection of information and also a roster which has up-to-date contact information so you can reach these people. You need to know their daily activity with the exposure date, which changes over time. So the 21 days is calculated by the last exposure date, which constantly changes. You need to inform the staff and keep the numbers down so that the fewest possible people require monitoring. You can need to supply temperature symptoms, train staff, set up data collection, use a call center protocols, and notify and plan for out-of-jurisdiction issues. We have a toolkit, and we've provided that to the 4 designated hospitals in our jurisdiction. Thanks.